Good morning. I'm Paul Fleming. I'm from the University of North Carolina. And I would like to invite you all for the next 15 minutes to take a trip with me to the Caribbean. I thought you guys might enjoy that. I'm going to be presenting on some research that my team and I have done in the Dominican Republic around recruiting men into HIV research. So I will get started. And I have no relationships to disclose. So thinking globally, HIV is primarily transmitted through heterosexual sex, but various systematic reviews of interventions and research has found that heterosexual men are actually underrepresented in both our HIV prevention interventions and research generally. We just heard from a great example of an intervention targeting men, but nonetheless they are underrepresented in how we are conducting HIV research. Various researchers have found some of the reasons that they're not including men is that they're difficult to recruit into HIV prevention trials. Some of the reasons that researchers have found is that they're less connected with health systems, so oftentimes women are going for regular checkups, and so we can access women that way, but men aren't going to clinics as frequently. There's conflicts with work schedules. And then generally, men are less willing than women to be participating in community health programs. So that presents some challenges for researchers that want to be enrolling men into their HIV prevention programs. And again, globally, both female sex workers and their male partners are a key population in preventing transmission of HIV. And so both the sexual partners who are their regular partners, such as boyfriends and husbands, and then also their clients who are paying for sex with the sex workers, those are key populations that we want to be targeting. But globally, there's been almost zero surveillance of male clients or male partners of sex workers. Almost all these surveillance has been conducted with sex workers themselves. Additionally, if you look at HIV prevention interventions, there are very few that are targeting the male clients or male partners. Most of them are targeting sex workers themselves. And what this ends up doing is it puts the burden for protection on sex workers rather than on the men. And so what our team has been interested in is how do we recruit the male clients and partners into our HIV prevention surveillance, research, and then also interventions. So now we're in the Caribbean. Specifically in the Dominican Republic, where we've conducted our research. Just to give you a little background, HIV prevalence at this point is about 1% across the country, but among female sex workers, it ranges between 3% and 8%, depending on the region. Our work has focused in the capital, in Santo Domingo, and the team, not myself, but the rest of the team has been working in there since the early 90s. Dominican Republic emerged as one of the countries with the highest prevalence in the Western Hemisphere in the 90s, and so our team has been working to increase condom use between sex workers and their clients, and they've had a large amount of success. At this point, over 80% of sex workers are using condoms with their new clients. What we have found, though, is that consistent condom use with their more regular partners, so this could either be a regular client that they're seeing regularly or their boyfriend or husband, condom use is very low among those populations. So we've been focusing for the past 5 to 10 years specifically on these regular partnerships. So our study aim, as I mentioned, we've been working with sex workers and men for the past 20 years, the study team has. But we've had a lot more success recruiting women into our intervention trials and into research generally. And we've had some success recruiting men, but we're curious what are the best strategies to do so. So what we ended up doing was we conducted a formative qualitative study where we were interviewing both sex workers and male regular partners. So I'll use the term regular partner, and what I mean by that is it's a trusted or intimate partner with whom a sex worker has had sexual relations at least 4 times in the last 3 months. So this can be a regular client, or it could be, most frequently, this is a boyfriend or husband, so it's sort of the main partner of the sex worker. The female sex workers were recruited from an ongoing cohort study that our team is conducting, and then the regular partners were referred by the sex workers themselves. We didn't recruit couples into the study for ethical reasons, but we do have 20 regular partners and 20 female sex workers, so for a total of 40 interviews. The interviews were conducted in Spanish by Dominican researchers on our study team. Mostly what we were curious about is to understand a little bit better about these different relationships, but then asking specifically, what's the best way to bring regular partners and clients into our HIV prevention research? We use thematic codes around sort of recruitment to better understand this. To give you an idea of the sample that we had, so for the most part, these were in the early 30s. These were mostly stable relationships. You can see the average length of relationship that each one had was about 6 years. That ranged between 5 months and longer, but they were regular partners. They had been together for a while. You can also note that both the men and the women, only 10% of them reported consistent condom use with that main partner. So that's relatively low. And then you'll see that this is a population that is at high risk for HIV. So of the female sex workers, the average number of sexual partners in the last month was 17, and that ranged between 1 and 60. And for the men, the average number of sex partners in the last month was 3, and that ranged between 1 and 15. So getting to the results of our interviews, one of the first things we were curious about is where should we be recruiting male clients and partners. And sort of in previous research, we had gone to the venues themselves where men were looking for sex workers and recruited through them, but then we've also invited them to research offices. So we were curious to get their perspective on this. And both the men and the women really responded that it's best to be referring men into our studies rather than going to where they are and approaching them directly. So one of the reasons they said this was that, you know, at a bar, the men aren't going to feel comfortable to really open up. And so this first quote is a man really saying, well, if a researcher approached me, I wouldn't admit that I have a sex worker partner to them. And so we would get sort of a biased sample, maybe only the men that were willing to admit they had a partner. And so they really thought that referrals were a better option. The men said that they thought it would be good if either the sex worker referred their main partners or men themselves referred their friends that they knew had sex worker partners. And most of the men we interviewed were very enthusiastic, and they kind of were like, do you want me to tell my friend? I can get him here. And so this guy's saying, oh, don't worry, I'll explain him. It's at this place, it's on this floor, they're going to ask you these questions, and you'll go, and it'll be great. And so part of what came out of that was that the men really felt like their friends needed to hear from them that this was a safe space, and then they would be willing to go. But if us as researchers went to them directly, they would be more hesitant. The sex workers also said that they were happy to refer their regular clients or regular partners, although some of them did say, my partner is unaware that I'm a sex worker, and so in that case, I'm unwilling to refer him into our study. So again, we need to consider that we probably will get very few partners that are unaware of the status just because of that sensitivity. And both the men and the women kind of referred to this idea that they need to help a man understand that this is a safe space. So the woman says, you've got to tell them, look, my love, talk with them, explain it to them, sit with them, caress them, so that they understand. I think, did the mic go out? Okay, I'll try to talk loudly. So then we were also curious about their willingness to be recruited. So how would men perceive being recruited into a research trial or a research intervention? And both men and women said that they thought that both clients and regular partners would be very willing to participate. But they did have this idea that there's a subpopulation of men that just wouldn't feel comfortable talking about sexual health or talking about their sexual behaviors. So for example, one male regular partner said, 3 out of my friends would be willing. There's 2 of them that I know are the type of people that for them to have a conversation with someone like this, I know that they'd say, don't talk to me about that stuff. So there was sort of, both the men and the women felt like there was a few men that they knew that just wouldn't be willing to talk about their sexual behaviors or talk about sex, but that generally most men would be willing to participate. And then the other thing, some of the sex workers mentioned that their partner was aware of their status as a sex worker, but they didn't like to talk about that with other people because it made them embarrassed. So that's another challenge to consider when recruiting men into these types of research. We were also curious where to interview. Many programs have had success going to where men are and conducting research interviews at that location, or going to communities, doing it in the home. And then the alternative is to invite them to a research office. And so we sort of posed those different scenarios. And what we found is that most men and women felt that men would feel most comfortable traveling to a research office that was away from their neighborhood and away from where they spent their time socially. This really was related to concerns about confidentiality, concerns about gossip among their peers. One of the male regular partners said, it's not the same if you go where there's a bunch of people and try to talk about something that is intimate and private. So they felt like even if you were in a private space within a community setting, it wouldn't be confidential and it wouldn't be private. We also wanted to see if asking men to be tested for HIV as part of research would be a barrier to their participation. And we mostly found that wouldn't be a barrier at all. For the most part, both the men and the women said, oh yeah, that's not an issue at all. Although we did hear from some men reporting, well, I have some friends that don't want to get tested because they just don't want to find out. They know they're at high risk, but they don't want to find out. So for example, the second quote, there's some people that screw around and still don't get tested because they're scared. They'd prefer not to know. And the barriers to testing were around this embarrassment, not wanting to know. And then we did hear from a few people that they knew that their sex worker partner was tested regularly. And so they felt, well, what's the point of me getting tested because I know that she's getting tested regularly. But that was actually only two participants that mentioned that. So we don't really think that HIV testing presents a barrier, although it may need to be presented in a certain way so that men will agree to be tested as part of research. And then finally, we were wondering, well, where should we test these men? Again, in the Dominican Republic, they'll do mobile testing units to go out to communities or go out to bars to conduct HIV testing, but then also they can come to a clinic to get tested, and we were wondering which would be preferable for these men. For the most part, we heard again that they would prefer to be coming to a research office to be tested. Again, they were worried about the gossip associated with being tested in their community, and so they thought if they went to a mobile testing site, then everybody would mention, oh, this guy got tested. And so they felt a little bit more comfortable being able to go by themselves to a research office and get tested there in privacy. So to wrap up a little bit, our main finding is that male clients and regular partners are willing to participate, and so that's not really the challenge. There are men that are willing to participate, both being interviewed, being tested, etc. So at this point, it's our job as researchers to sort of overcome some of the barriers that were identified. And some of the main ones that we found were this issue of confidentiality and privacy, which I think is an issue when you're researching any population. But specifically, it seems in our experience in the Dominican Republic, the women seem to overcome that barrier a little bit quickly, and the men might need a little bit more help understanding sort of the trust dynamic within the research setting. Also, we heard a lot about men's embarrassment to be talking about sexual health or their sexual behaviors, which again, I think talking about sexual health with any population, there's that embarrassment factor to overcome, but it's just something to be cognizant with this population that that we need to sort of create that safe space and confidential space to talk about these issues. Another concern that was mentioned, not by many people, but it's something to consider, especially with this population, is the unintentional disclosure of the woman's sex worker status. So even if we were able to recruit a man into the study, we need to be very careful about disclosing that we kind of know his partner is a sex worker. And so what really comes out of this is that trust is the key dimension of successful recruitment. And what we heard from the men and women is that these referrals is a way to sort of transfer the trust that they had. So men and women that have participated in the studies trust the research team, and they can transfer that trust to their friends or their partners. And that's probably the best strategy to be building that trust for them to come to participate in research. We think that it can be done by going out to venues or going out to communities, but I think extra effort will be needed to to be taken to make sure that there is that trust dynamic if you're not using referrals. And finally, I mean, we're talking about men being embarrassed about talking about their relationships and sexual health. And so you think that men, you know, cultural notions of masculinity may be limiting their ability to talk about these things, whereas the women, at least that are participating in our studies, seem to be much more open talking about their relationships and especially sexual relationships. Another thing to consider is that these men largely are not going to clinics, are not not being seen by doctors, not going to medical offices, things like that. And so it's sort of a foreign environment to invite somebody to. Our particular research office is located within a hospital. And so it's a foreign environment for many of these men, whereas the women are going regularly to the hospital. So it's much more comfortable setting. So that's something that we need to overcome to make sure that it, again, feels like a safe space for them. And so basically recruitment becomes the first step to successful HIV programming so that we can learn more about the population and really target our interventions towards them. So hopefully with these findings, we'll be able to do our work a little bit better. I would like to highlight a few limitations when we're considering the findings from this study. These were interviews that were conducted in our research offices, and that these men and women did come to the research offices, so they may be slightly biased that they had a good experience there and they think other men will as well. So we're interested in talking maybe to men who we find in venues or in communities and see what their perspective is, if it's exactly the same. And that is all. I'd like to thank the participants and all of you. Thank you.